one small step for man, one giant. I have a dream.
Oh my, this is a noisy world.
It's really an ominous.
What would you say you do here?
Who's giving them the business?
For the children.
This is the Brian Suits Show.
Good morning.
You're listening to a Brian Suits Show replay.
Kevin McCarthy will be the titular Speaker of the House, meaning that Nancy Pelosi's gone. So to help us talk about what the hell happened and the way forward is our political go-to guy, John Thomas, longtime friend, longtime political genius, and welcome aboard. And I apologize for not getting you on earlier before the actual election.
No problem. Good to hear you. Good to be with you, Brian.
So what happened? I was looking at a Harvard something or other poll over a month and a half ago, and it was showing that the gap between what the American people were concerned about and what the Democrats were concerned about couldn't be wider. For people, it was, you know, economy, inflation, gas prices, crime. Then over here, what was people's perception of Democratic concerns, abortion and democracy? And it was so weird that there was a disconnect. Well, what happened? Why was apparently this disconnect not reflected at the polls?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brian. And there are, as in all things in politics, sometimes it's complicated. There's multiple factors. First, the issue set didn't really come, well, in May or June in the summer, inflation was raging, gas prices were surging. And if the election were held back then, I think Republicans would have done better than what they ended up doing in November. Then, as you recall, the gas prices began to come down a little bit. Baby formula got back in stock and the abortion decision came down, shifting the issue set and exciting Democrats. But more importantly, something happened there, Brian, which is it excited white liberals to open up their pocketbooks to send $50 to their candidates and Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Party. That fueled the coffers of the Democratic Party, which typically, Brian, in a midterm cycle when you're the party in power, it's hard for you to get donor enthusiasm to be able to, you know, fight the air wars. I think the biggest thing we saw, and I'm happy to get into more detail, but of course, the economy came back into focus, I'd say, in the last 2 to 3 weeks. It was too little too late, as we saw with Oz and the debate and others, is because the vote by mail period had already been occurring. I think the Democrats did a better job at that. But the biggest thing, if I just had to put on one thing, Brian, it would be the spending disparity between the parties. If you look at the main contested Senate races, governor's races, oftentimes the Republicans were being outspent almost 10 to 1 in those races. And what does that mean? That means that they can go up on TV and win the vote by mail period, just drowning us with megaphones. And so they run up the score. And by the time the issue set came into focus in our favor in the last 2 to 3 weeks, it was too little too late.
And the thing I noticed, like in the Fetterman, Dr. Oz thing, was that they said, well, spent on this 151 by the Democrats and 110 million by the Republicans. The difference is that the Democrats were spending money and donating it directly to Fetterman, and so he got a cheaper rate on TV and radio.
100%.
And that happened here.
Yes. People forget that the candidate rate when you're a candidate versus a super PAC or an independent expenditure, the candidate oftentimes gets a 50% discount on the rate, meaning their dollars go way further. And there's one other important thing, Brian, is when the money goes directly to a campaign, the candidate can go directly on camera. Like they can control that message and pop it a little bit more than just a super PAC. But yes, the dollars, it was a significant spending disparity. It really was.
And clearly the incumbent senator here, Patty Murray, is out of ideas and has nothing significant to hang her hat on. And the template nationally seemed to be, if you're that senator or congressperson, just say, democracy, abortion, which is kind of their big lie, is that democracy was on the ballot, or here in the darkest blue state in Washington, that abortion's on the ballot. And it seems like they just pounded that so hard. And unless you, as a Republican, if you didn't go directly against that, you're almost conceding it. Even though I laughed at it and said, okay, democracy's not on the ballot. It's going to be painted on the side of a bayonet. But it worked.
Yeah, it did work. And I actually found the abortion thing fascinating, particularly in more blue states, also in like California, for instance, you know, where people were generally concerned. And I think in part, the Democrats did a good job to sow confusion of what the Dobbs decision actually was. It's like people didn't realize that actually because of that decision, Brian, in places, for instance, like California, not only were they not going to restrict your ability to abort a baby, but they were going to put in an express lane and have the government pay for it. I mean, that right was never at stake, but it caused a lot of liberals to vote. As well as open up their pocketbooks. And Brian, let's also not forget, in a lot of these states, they put ballot measures about abortion to drive turnout and sow confusion in their state.
And that's how politics works. It's pernicious, but it's an effective tactic. And it's funny that the one thing that the Democrats found out is the way to get young people out is to lie. Because they're simpletons. They're not going to drill down and go, wait a minute, this is Washington State. Abortion's not going to be illegal here. What are they talking about? That they didn't need to do that here, but it's a very clever tactic.
That's right. They appeal to what we call their lizard-like brain. You know, oh, we're going to give you student relief. Here's a handout. Don't know when you'll get it, but here's your handout. You know, oh, they're going to take away abortion. Like, but the thing is, Brian, if you look at the impact of what they did with the trickery on abortion, it did have an impact, particularly in places like California. If you look at the Scott Bach, Katie Porter race, Katie's like essentially a member of the squad. You know, Scott outperformed, but he only lost by a few thousand votes. And you're telling me that if the issue of abortion wasn't on the statewide ballot, that might have reduced turnout a little bit, and Bob probably could have beat Katie Porter. I mean, these things have real world impacts.
Okay, so the way forward, so that puts that to bed. That puts 2022 to bed. Not a problem. So now going forward, I see a clear way forward here. And here's my thing. I think that what Trump did, I didn't vote for him in 2016, but I liked the results. I liked him blasting ISIS, you know, to hell, and I liked him not walking around with a clipboard of names that were going to drone. I liked that style of, look, just handle it, give me the results and all that. But I get the sense from a lot of West Coast Republicans. I can't speak for the Midwest and all that, but I can say my gut feeling on the West Coast is that people kind of want to move on. And especially in a lockdown state like this one, watching the guy on the other side of the country keep the state open and get better results in California, which locked down with a slightly better looking governor. They locked down and had way worse outcomes. But that guy in Florida seems to me to have the momentum and have the future. But is the Trump train still got momentum?
Well, it does. However, it's really a fascinating time to be watching politics, Brian. I mean, the Republican electorate is, I can feel it. It's actually shifting underneath our feet, and we're seeing it in lots of different manifestations. Primarily, we're seeing it in public polling in early battleground states. You know, if you had checked just a couple months ago, in head-to-head stackups between DeSantis and Trump, Trump was up by anywhere from 15 to 25 points. Now, in almost every single key primary battleground state, DeSantis is winning by double digits. Now, is that going to stay that way? Hard to definitively say, but it looks like the voters. Now, obviously, Trump has what we call in politics a high floor, meaning he's got his ride or die people. But that may not be enough against Governor DeSantis. When what I like to say is, it's not that Donald Trump is not popular, Brian, with the Republican electorate. It's not that they don't like Donald Trump. It's that they like winning more. Politics is not a cult of personality only. It is at the end of the day about winning, and primary voters understand that. And we need to win. And DeSantis showed, while the rest of the country on election night had a red mist at best, DeSantis showed that he could create a red tsunami and put together the coalitions that turn Florida from a swing state to a ruby red state.
But my thing is, my cult is the cult of winning. You know, and
I—that's right.
I mean, and that's great. I thought 2020 would have been part of the cult of winning or whatever, but it's not. And a lot of fundraisers are walking away from publicly walking away from Trump and all that. So I guess is Biden, who turned 80 on Sunday, is he going to run in 2024? It looks to me like he feels like the wind's at his back. I think he's going to run.
At this point, he probably will, and there's really nothing that the those in his party who may not want him to run can do. Number one, I think Trump gives Biden an argument to run for reelect simply because Biden defeated Trump, was the only one who could do it before. He'll do it again. At least that's the argument. And also, look, coming off of the midterms, they did lose the House, but they held on to the Senate and they didn't get shellacked. So while I don't think that that's a testament to Biden, I think Biden is very beatable with the right campaign and candidate. I don't see Biden going anywhere at this point because the powers that be at the DNC like the status quo. And furthermore, Brian, you just, unless you absolutely don't have to, you don't give up the benefit and the power of incumbency on a reelect. When you're POTUS, the value of incumbency is huge. Why would you
fly in on
up?
Air Force One? You fly in with two of them, in fact.
Well, right. Well, but it also, you speak and you make news. You have the ability to drive the agenda. And why would you give that up to, let's say, Pete Buttigieg? Why would you do that?
See, the other thing,
Brian, is the DNC absolutely hates Kamala Harris.
That's the thing. If the god of politics had a sense of humor, Kamala Harris would be running as their nominee and be on the stage debating Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, well, that's the problem the Democrats have if Biden doesn't run, which is, look, they don't want Kamala Harris. They're not going to let Kamala Harris get it. And if Kamala thinks she's entitled. And so if she doesn't win the primary and become the Democratic nominee, there are concerns that she's literally going to burn down the Democratic parties just blaming the Democrats for being a bunch of racists, and that's the only reason she didn't get the nomination. So Democrats at the party are very scared. You're kind of damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I think it looks like they'll stick with
Ukraine is a country in Europe.
Ukraine's a country in Europe, John. That's by the way, we're on with John Thomas. We'll let you go. Like I say, even if I love Trump and had a, Trump 2024 sign, all that, this last week, I would be going with Ron DeSantis. That's me planting my flag now. In the interest of full disclosure, we should say that you have started, or you're part of one of the first Ron DeSantis PACs.
Yeah. It's called Ron to the Rescue, and you can go Ron to the rescue.com if you want to see our campaign, join our effort, support us. Yeah, look, and I'm a longtime Trump supporter. I'm the furthest thing from an ever Trumper you're going to find. But it's time to move on. It's time to start winning.
That's like I say, that's my cult. And in my cult, we also worship the Kamala some days on the stage with or if not her, then maybe Gavin. So the Democratic Party, the DNC loves Gavin. Isn't that weird? They love Gavin, right? Except they know the California
Gavin because they feeds to they're kind of a liberal elite nature, but they also know that San Francisco doesn't sell in New Hampshire or Michigan.
No,
so it's a problem.
Anyway, so that fantasy of either Kamala or Gavin on the stage with Ron DeSantis, probably not going to happen, but all right. Well, John Thomas, thank you very much. And, you're our political go-to guy. We'll get you back
Thanks,
soon.
Brian. All right. Talk to you soon.
There he goes, John Thomas. And so, We can discuss it on air or off air. A checking of your texting is going to happen here at 830, 800-465-8770. And so I know that, you know, like I say, for people who were absolutely, you know, you saw that announcement two nights ago, it would appear that Trump someone has told Trump, look, get beyond 2020, get beyond that election thing and just, you know, run again. But the reality is the money. And this is something that knowing John Thomas for a couple of years, I never understood this relationship. And now I do. So when people say, well, Trump's rich on his own, he can fund his own campaign. No, you still need donations. You still need that. And some of his go-to donors have very explicitly in the last 48 hours say no, we're moving on. And all that.
I think there are reasons for hope for the GOP after the midterm results, even though the general consensus is there was an underperforming by the party. But if I might, for one moment, there are also reasons for pessimism, in my view, and that is Trump is in this race now for 2024. And he will never have any intention to go quietly into that good night. So even if, as John said there, that DeSantis is outperforming him by double digits in some of these early primary states, it's hard for me to see a scenario where Trump gets beat in the lead up to the nomination and then goes, you know what, for the good of the party and the good of the country and the good of conservative ideals, I'm going to throw my full unbridled support behind this person I lost to. I don't see the guy as being able to see beyond his own reflection in the mirror. And so I think there could be some tumultuous times ahead.
Yeah. And the thing is, because Trump dislikes McCarthy and Mitch McConnell intensely, what's happening behind the scenes is that the Republicans are saying, look, let's have one nominee going against Trump in the primaries. And that one guy is Ron DeSantis. Mike Pompeo, I don't know why he runs around thinking anyone even knows him, his face and name. I think he's a smart guy. I like to see him in government. But Mike Pompeo, the candidate, is just a distraction.
But anybody who potentially wins the primary besides Trump needs those Trump voters to win a national election.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the difference between a mature politician and a narcissist is the ability to step away and go, I support my guy over here. That's my guy. He's the nominee. I'm stepping back and going over there. AM 770 KTTH.
Masterful
singer. You know how much I love this.
Friday.
AM 770 KTTH, Brian Suits
here. Very real Friday.
By the way, I've been looking for the Hall of Fame guy. He hasn't showed up today yet.
That's a bummer.
I might have missed him at 6:59. So I bet this gets him back. A little Raycon of singers. All right. So there you go, AM770 KTTH. That is Raycon of the Singers from 1973, everybody. But revived in a commercial now.
I feel like I need an old-fashioned and a cigarette.
You know how the Grey Cup is awesome and is played out in the snow of Winnipeg. The World Cup in the hottest place on earth in Qatar, in Qatar. Talk about a bait and switch. Remember, I was telling you that at the last second, the Qatari government said, all right, there can be beer gardens, but there's going to be a $10 per beer cannot be served in more than half a liter, which is a pretty healthy cup. I want to say that, but it rivals a 16-ounce. And $10, whatever you charge, but we're getting $10 per beer. And Budweiser was like, you didn't say this 10 years ago when you promised us that women could wear pants and men could wear shorts and have a beer for the soccer, for the football. And the Qataris are like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? That you effed up. You trusted us. Well, they've even come back from that. But I'll tell you about that right after Dice Capone, Vicious Seattle Pimp. The defendant accused of sex trafficking in Seattle pleaded not guilty yesterday in the case. It came to light after prosecutors say a 20-year-old woman rescued by a rideshare driver who had a shootout. I mean, this is a taxi driver update, but except it's not a 14-year-old, Jody Foster. It's a 20-year-old. But the rideshare driver that happened to pick her up on 99, where she was hiding from this guy after running away from him at the hotel that he was sex trafficking her with, has a gunfight. He calls 911. He coordinates to meet Seattle PD. He gets on I-5 on the Mercer on-ramp and then exits, you know, like Union, and meets Seattle PD there at the off-ramp. So anyway, Winston Burt, known on the street as Dice Capone, a 30-year-old pimp, appeared in King County Superior Court, ordered to remain held on $750,000 bail, which is 75. Well, you got to put up 15 or 10. I don't know. Never been arrested for the pimping. But the guy was renting a 6-bedroom house in Seward Park, something like a $6 million house with 6 bedrooms in Seward Park for the girls. They were working out of hotels up on Aurora, which is such a shocker. So I'm thinking maybe he can afford to hand over a car, you know, title to a bail bondsman. Anyway, no update there. Anyway, the charges include human trafficking, promoting prostitution, assault, and drive-by shooting. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Seattle is also reviewing the case for potential federal charges because, if you don't know this, the origin of the FBI was a thing called the Mann Act, M-A-N-N. It was not 100 years ago. It wasn't illegal to kidnap a girl and take her over state lines for the purpose of human trafficking, of prostitution. And the Mann Act was implemented to stop that nefarious pursuit. So, of course, it's a federal violation as well. Anyway, Dice Capone brought 3 women to Seattle about a month ago after trafficking them in California and Arizona. And he recruited additional women to, quote, work, close quote, for him after arriving. They stayed in a $1.4 million 6-bedroom home near Seward Park in South Seattle. He would drive them to work on Aurora Avenue North, and he rented hotel rooms. The women were expected to earn him $2,000 per day. So that's, I mean, you hear what that is. That's there's not a trafficking is one word. Slavery is another. And it's psychological slavery. When the first time this woman tried to escape, the other women beat her up. And then he would tattoo them. He would mark them on the face with like his name or some symbol or something. And it's not something that gets a lot of column inches at Seattle Times or on TV around here. But it is something that goes on up and down the I-5 corridor. And for people who are, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce people saying, well, no harm, no foul, you know, if cheap workers want to come to the country. The problem is a lot of people in Central America send their kids up here. And the kids at the age of 14, 15, 16, they believe lies. Like when the Obama administration announced the DACA, well, guess what? There was a giant valve that was opened up on kids. And so much so that they had to open up FEMA camps on military bases across the Southwest. Well, they ran out of ways to figure out how do we place these people with relatives. Well, they don't have relatives up here. So in one of the most underreported scandalous stories of all time, Obama's FEMA would just let these 14-year-olds go as long as they signed a waiver. And so human traffickers were lining up in vans with stories talking to people through chain link fences saying, do you want to be a maid in a hotel in Sacramento, in Eugene, Oregon, in Salem, in Federal Way? You're 14, someone's speaking Spanish to you. They're going to give you a cell phone, the whole thing. Hundreds, if not thousands of young girls were trafficked this way by the federal government because they were so overwhelmed by a problem they made on themselves. Well, that's happening right now again. I'm going to take a wild stab and tell you that without knowing anything about the victims, that they're not naming the victims. But wild stab, the 18, 19, and 20-year-old girls that Dice Capone was trafficking up here, not from America, probably from south of America and probably here illegally, and because they're that vulnerable. So never mind artificially depressing wages or whatever. That's the legacy of a super loose border and also incentivizing people to come here.
And just to highlight your point a little bit further, Brian, along Aurora Avenue North, this is a statistic from the senior deputy prosecuting attorney. He said over the last 3 to 4 years, there's been a 34% average increase in the number of identified minors who have been sex trafficked in this area.
No es bueno.
This is pure evil that's being perpetrated in the shadows, but right in our area here. And it can't be overstated, the depravity that's taking place. Why can't we increase patrols 10 times? I mean, right around? We know exactly where it is and what's going on.
And by the way, folks, it's slavery. If you're wondering, oh, where's all the slavery these days? It's on the West Coast of the United States. Okay, it's on Aurora Avenue. That is what it is. Whether it's an American citizen or not, when they're trafficked away from their family and all that, it's slavery. And I've told the story ad nauseum. But one of the big drivers for daughter and I to tunnel out of California was when about a year and a half ago, illegal marijuana grows because California is slightly less regulated than Washington. And Oregon, illegal marijuana grows from the cartels were happening physically in California, and they were going down to the Texas border and getting free farmhands in the form of 13 and 14 year old kids, putting them on the pot grows to water them under the guard of some, you know, high fat cartel guy with an AK. No kidding. And then when they cut down the weed and harvested it, the kids were cut loose. And it's like, all right, go north. I hear it's fun up there. It's called Fresno. And they were walking by my house and they were not speaking Spanish. They were from so far deep in Guatemala, they didn't speak Spanish. And I talked to a friend of mine, LA County guy, and he said, yep, it's all over the county. And he said, we're going to start the raids. They raided one place that looked like, you know, a tulip factory in Holland. It was so well developed, plastic over hoop, you know, greenhouses, and the whole thing. And there were kids. There were 13, 14-year-old kids who got in a van in Arizona or Texas because they were told, oh, you don't have to speak English. You're going to be a maid in Oklahoma or Kansas. And then, you know, wow, we sure are driving a long ways for Oklahoma. Yeah, it's called California. You'll love it. So if it's not cheap labor for drugs, and by the way, this is now in Southern Oregon. And it will be in Skamania County. It will be in Grays Harbor County, closer to the market. Anywhere where the state has screwed up marijuana, has decriminalized possessing marijuana, but has absolutely goat screwed the business of doing it, they will give you cheaper marijuana and because they don't pay for labor. So that's happening.
You're listening to a Best of the Brian Suit Show.
I'm 770 KTTH, Brian Suits here, and if you're wondering, whatever happened to Dean Logan? Well, he just threw two elections down in L.A. County, his new place. The developer, the common sense businessman who flipped a Democrat a month ago, whatever, because you have to. Dean Logan kept counting the ballots until former congressperson Karen Bass is now going to be the mayor of L.A., who's never run anything in her life. Because why would she want to? She's been trained in Havana. She literally brags about being trained in Havana, Cuba. So there you go. That should clean up immediately. And same MO for the office of sheriff. They had for 4 years, they had a sheriff who was actually sheriffing. He was actually fighting crime and stuff. So, of course, he had to go. So he's gone. Sheriff Alex Villanueva, too Hispanic, is what Dean Logan decided. So anyway, they kept counting until the Democrat was winning. Well, today, I didn't, you know, one of my windmills that I like to joust at Starbucks is, oh, sure, they're all environmentally aware and stuff. Then shouldn't I be able to bring a refill cup? Why do I have to buy their cups? And when not only that, but if I have to buy your cup, train your people how to put the lids on the cup correctly. You know that little seam on the 20-ounce cups?
I'm with you.
Which is, by the way, when I'm in Italy, I'll call it venti. Here in America, I'll say 20. That doesn't go anywhere where you're tilting it to drink. That should go on the back. And make sure you seat that lid. Well, anyway, today is Red Mug Day. Pardon me, Red Cup Day in Starbucks. And that's why, to protest how the company is handling union negotiations, 100 stores across the country, employees are going to walk off the job today for Red Cup Day. I would, play ball or don't play ball. Either close that store or fire those employees. That's how you play. So I'm going to, in sympathy with them, with Starbucks, I'm not going to go to Starbucks today at all. I'm not going to go until they fire these commies on of all things, ironically, a Red Cup Day.
Is there a hammer and sickle on the
probably.
I think these cups are
they would
reusable,
be at work,
actually.
This is the first time unionized Starbucks baristas have banded together across the country. I don't say solidarity. It's part of a wave of increased labor activity this year. I don't know what you start at per hour in Seattle at Starbucks, but I'm guessing it's not minimum wage. You could say that the vast pool of available employees is growing day by day with the Amazon layoffs as well. Because you got to, I don't know, if you're the marketing director or user experience, are you just going to live off your unemployment for a couple of weeks and just assume another tech job is going to come along? Or would you take something to fill your days? I don't know. I would just say that.
Hope is not a strategy.
It's a real tough year. Starbucks would help by firing these guys and then paying more or something. What's really funny about Whole Foods before Jeff bought it is it has this sort of, hippie look and like, hey, we're local produce. And it has this sort of, hey, you're practically at a farm stand and all. It was run by a just yelping libertarian. And when he had employees, I want to say in Indiana, band together and vote to form a union, he closed the store. He went, oh, okay, that must be nice. You guys go ahead and make a union. I'm going to go ahead and close that store. And when the customers who have become Whole Foodized start howling about, well, why'd you close the Whole Foods? I'm going to say, ask the commies. There you go. Because everyone I've talked to has said, yeah, you're treated really well at Whole Foods. There's no reason to band together unless some agitator, has come there.
Speaking of Jeff Bezos and Amazon.com, Brian, I've developed a strategy for my holiday purchases this year. Typically, I just go right to Amazon.com and look for all my items there.
The gun and a wetsuit?
I'm going to buy that, of course, hopefully on Black Friday. But I'm trying this year to buy less stuff off Amazon. Lately I've been thinking, I don't like the fact that one company is starting to control every item that I purchase. So like, for example,
well, earlier today you wanted a gun. Now you're getting a gun and a wetsuit.
And maybe you could poke some holes in this, and that's partly why I bring it up. But so like, we ran out of printer ink the other day, and rather than getting a little Brother toner cartridge on Amazon, I went to just the HP Brother website and bought it directly from the company.
Wrong.
It's taking 2 to 3 extra days. Obviously, Amazon ships faster.
But you need something printed right now.
No, in this case, I decided I could be delayed and it would be just fine. But don't you think that's a decent strategy going forward rather than just submitting your whole life?
You mean thinking ahead and checking your ink levels? Yeah, I think it's a great strategy. By the way, free endorsement. And I'll credit Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on the radio show. Two years ago, I bought that Epson inkwell, the thing with the gigantic ink cartridge. Yeah. They're not cartridges. You fill up inkwells. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, I print the crap out of stuff all day long, full color.
Still going strong?
Just got the ink alert on Cyan. I didn't know I printed so much Cyan.
PC load letter.
Got the ink alert. 2 years. I have not bought a cartridge in over 2 years.
Okay, so you're going to buy your new one from Amazon or just go direct?
I don't know when I'm ever going to have to get a new printer. I don't know. Oh, you mean the new ink?
Yeah, new ink cartridge.
I'll go to a store. They have it in stock.
Yeah, see,
there.
You're going to Costco then. Am I right to be more suspicious of Amazon? I feel like they sell way more crap from China. I feel like there's more scammy sales these days than there ever have been in the past. Sometimes Prime shipping isn't even 2 days anymore. It's like 4 to 5 days.
I'm the opposite. I have this problem. I realize I hit bottom with my Amazon addiction when a truck pulls up my long driveway that says, keep out, stay out, death awaits, and all this. and they all know that I'm bluffing on that. I'm outside minding my own business, obviously, and an Amazon truck pulls up, and I forgot what I ordered.
There you go, right.
And then I'm like, this is like every day's Christmas, or every day's my birthday. That's when I do, and the guy pulls up, and I said, what'd I get? And he's looking at me like, I don't go through the boxes. I don't know. I've got 10 seconds to get back out on the road. And so he, you know, throws me the box, and it was like a clone, you know, muck boots?
Mm-mm.
You know, the pull-on rubber neoprene boots?
Sure, I'll pretend like
muck
I know.
You don't know what muck boots are?
I'm not a big outdoorsman.
How do you even rent them? I realized when John Curley was here last for the midterm night on Tuesday night, he was wearing muck boots, and I realized I got to get those.
Did you?
I'm back in muck boot territory. So I go on the Zon.
No, don't go there.
And
go direct.
I forgot I ordered them, and the guy hands me this box. And I'm shaking. It's heavy, and I'm like, "What did I get?" And it was the boots.
Santa come early.
I know,
year.
And that's when I realized I have a problem. Hi, my name is Brian, and I'm Amazoned. Hi, Brian. So that's how that worked. So the audio is really, really hard to, it's really muddy. But President Xi Jinping at the G20 meeting sought out Justin Trudeau, who's wandering around like a waiter out of things to bring you. And he confronts him because Trudeau revealed everything that he and Xi spoke privately about. Because she has bought and paid for Canada, and he expects Canada to stay in line. And he treated Trudeau, and I retweeted, if you want to watch the video, it's just that it's really hard to hear because she goes through a translator. And he says, look, this is inappropriate that we spoke privately, then you spoke to your media. You know, that's just, you know, don't ever do that again. He's admonishing the leader of a G20 nation. And Trudeau, instead of saying, consume a satchel of Richards, he says, oh, well, we have a free and fair debate and dialogue. And no. This is a private meeting. You know, we have to, you know, be an adult here. And then Trudeau wanders off by himself. No guards, no nothing. Well, if you're unaware of this, there is a Canadian conservative newspaper, Global News and TV network. Canadian intelligence services are warning their government. Look, we literally have members of parliament who are seated in the federal parliament in Ottawa, who are on China's payroll. Here's a little bit. When we come back, I'll play the rest of this. But here's a little bit of this story up in,
with sources
in Canada.
Telling us that Beijing is pulling the strings. Sources tell Global News that in January of 2022, Canadian intelligence delivered a series of sensitive briefings to warn the Prime Minister and select members of his cabinet that the spy agency had evidence China was running sophisticated operations, including allegations of placing Chinese agents into the offices of sitting members of parliament.
Don't. Yeah, that makes a citizen take notice. Any rational country would take its own security seriously.